throw balls far. You want good words? Data Languager.
Talk real sports with a real man.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
And now, here's the be-all, end-all, know-it-all of high school, college, and pro sports. Aaron Skinny Kalk with The Skinny on Sports.
We're talking about practice, man. I'm the MVP!
It's going to be football, 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 and maybe just a tick of baseball. With the NFL starting on Thursday, what is it, Rams, Bills, Thursday night to get the season started. And then, of course, the NFL Sunday. We'll recap what happened on college football gridiron on Saturday. I look forward to what's coming up this week. High school football wrap-up with all the 4A1, A1, B1 teams. And then look forward to what's coming up this week on the high school football gridiron, not only right here but also around the state. And then I have a couple. I have one trivia question that I would like to ask. And then also a nugget from yesterday in Major League Baseball. We'll recap the Western Oklahoma Realty Pick'em standings. We'll also be talking all day long about Paul Jones Drug because it is a Paul Jones Drug Tuesday. So that's what we've got on tap for the show. Feel free to chime in. 225-9698 is the phone or the text line. It's 225-9698. Give us a call. Shoot us a text. We can talk about any of those things or what else might be on your mind. Feel free to chime in. 225-9698. If you're going to be outside of our listening area, there are a couple of ways to stay in touch with the show. One of those is to log on to KADSAM.com. The other is to download the app. The app's got it all. Radio stations, Penny News, high school football, live streaming, maybe. Big Elk TV and Paragon TV will both be on the air this week. Well, hopefully. So you can enjoy some of that if you're not able to get out to the different spots where those games are going to be going on. Also, you've got the Skinny on Sports podcast. If you miss the show entirely, you can check us out there, iTunes or KADSAM.com. Hello, Jared.
How are you?
Just wonderful. How are you?
I'm good. How was your three-day weekend?
It was nice. Watched a bunch of football on Saturday.
Yeah.
Went back and watched some football on Sunday that I didn't get to watch on Saturday because of the game times, you know.
Sure.
I had to check out. And then yesterday played a little golf and just really the family got back from Texas. They had a great trip. And so.
Well, good.
It was a nice weekend. How about
good.
You?
Oh, it was about a lot of the same. A lot of football, a lot of family time, friend time. It was a nice weekend.
You know, I thought I was
going to. Rodeo.
I thought I was going to see you this weekend.
Yeah, I had to bail. I had to bail last minute. My apologies.
Yeah, you weren't able to make it to the draft.
Yeah, it's I have to explain off air because it's hard to explain. I felt bad.
Oh, no worries.
I felt bad.
Yeah. We had fun without you.
I'm sure you did.
Actually, the draft was a lot more fun than that football game we were trying to watch at times between LSU and Florida State. And then as soon as I left, it was like a totally different game. But we can get there. Here's the question. Here's the trivia question.
Do we have a prize?
There's not a prize.
No.
The prize is you knowing what the answer is.
Okay. It's not like Jones and for Johnny's or anything. We're going to have a prize.
No. What happened on this day in 1995? 1995. Ponder that. What happened this day in sports in 1995?
Wow. Okay.
So.
That's something everybody can think about.
I mean, it is one of the greatest achievements in sports history. Okay. Probably an underrated one, if we're being honest. I have a feeling this guy knows because how much he likes the sport that it is. Nope, he doesn't.
Oh.
First guess in, Cordell Stewart. The Hail Mary against Michigan.
Oh, I remember that. No, listen. It's a good guess.
That might have happened, but that's not what I'm talking about.
That's a good guess.
Not what I'm much more historic than that. Much more. 225-9698. If you got a guess, fire us in a text. Let's talk about the high school football weekend. We were in Bridge Creek out in the stands enjoying the hot human weather.
Well, to start, and then it
the stylings of the Bridge Creek band.
Oh, yeah, good band.
And A dominant performance by the Elk City Elks, especially on the defense.
Man.
And that defensive line as the Elks beat Bridge Creek 51-0 to run their record to 2-0. Offensively, a lot of good, some bad. There it is. We have a winner, winner, chicken dinner. Cal Ripken.
Cal Ripken
broke Lou Gehrig's consecutive game streak played record in Major League Baseball, 21-31, on this day back in 1995. You won. Smart. That's
good
what I
job.
Like. But anyhow, the Elks defensively just dominant on the line. I think what was the final stat? Minus 25 yards of total offense for Bridge Creek.
Oh, that's crazy.
I don't believe they generated a first down off of a play. I think they had four all via penalties on the Elks defense. You couldn't ask for any more defensively. Created turnovers, a couple interceptions, like three fumble recoveries. So a lot to like about what Elk City did defensively. Offensively, you can see what it can be at times. You know, it's just kind of still that a little bit of growing pains, and it's exactly kind of what everybody thought, right?
Mm-hmm.
With what was coming back, you know, the line play should be really, really good, and for the most part it has been. Defensive has been the whole time. It's going to take just a little bit of familiarity and being out in the heat of battle to get the offense ironed out. But, man, once it does, if it does, Elk City's going to be a hard team to beat.
Yeah. And it's crazy to say that, you know, you beat them 51-51. And here we are nitpicking some things. But that's what coaches want, too. You know, you just don't. Yes, you want to be perfect, but you kind of want to be perfect at the end of the year and not at the beginning. So there were some things that we saw that, you know, and Daniel saw too. That, by the way, you asked me about my weekend. Shout out to Daniel's jambalaya.
You sneak by there?
Absolutely. Yes. It was great. That's a great brunch. That's really good stuff. But back to Elk City. I'm glad there were things that we saw that they could work on. I was disappointed Bridge Creek didn't throw it down the field more often. I think Elk City was too. I know those guys in the brown and white were too. They were wanting to be tested like that, the kids on the field. But I think we'll see that this Friday. How Canadian runs offense, very little research on them yet, but I think more of a pro-style type offense is what you're going to get a lot out of. You know, think Pampa, you know, think Texas teams where that it's more of a modern offense. So that will be tested, and this will be a big test on Friday night. But as far as last Friday night, you couldn't have asked for a better outing because it could have been distracted first road game of the year. You know, it was their homecoming, a later start. I mean, there could have been a lot of distractions there. Could have been high about, hey, we just beat a 5A school to open up the season. We're pretty dang good. They all looked pretty focused, and they came out and took care of business like they should have against a team that they're better than.
Yeah, I thought Daniel made that observation early on because it didn't feel the energy and the electricity in the air around the stadium didn't feel the same as it did for the opener here.
Right.
But
that's, you know, the opener compared. Okay, we got the opener out of the way. But
they had to generate that on their own as the team to generate. And he said, listen, you can just sense a quiet confidence.
Sure.
And that's exactly what it looked like. So the Elks 2-0, Canadian Texas come to town on homecoming this Friday. Elsewhere around the district, I think a couple of scores jump out. One in the negative and one in a positive way. I think a lot of people had their eyes on what happened at McGinnis with Clinton losing to Bishop McGinnis 46-14. We've talked to all in the whole offseason about how tough the non-district schedule was going to be for the Red Tornadoes. All of a sudden, that Kingfisher win is looking a little bit better after the Yellow Jackets knocked off Weatherford. But McGinnis, right from the start, it felt like every time we checked the score, McGinnis had scored again. And so the Red Tornadoes got way behind. And then on the positive, if you're a 4A1 fan, seeing what Cash did to Altus, I think maybe kind of raises a little of an eyebrow of, could Cash be, you know, one of those teams that's really vying to be at the top of the district?
Yeah. Clinton, that was a tough ask, man, to go to McGinnis. They're a top team in 5A. And what's happened with Carl Albert's situation, they could be the favorite now. You know, teams like Booker T. Washington might have something to say about that. But That was just a tough ask for Clinton. And, you know, it, listen, it's – I think, you know, when you're seeing a lot of turnover, which has been highly – really discussed, and depth could be a thing when you got the numbers like a going up against a 5A school. I mean, McGinnis was good and knew that going into. They got to rebound in a hurry because now they got a tough 3A school in Heritage Hall. At Heritage Hall, too. It doesn't get any easier for Clinton, but that's how they like it. And as far as cash, now, that's kind of a – is it Fool's Gold? I mean, because it's Altus, or is it – or is cash back to a contender in this district? I want to see a couple more games to determine that. I don't know what their schedule looks like. Hopefully they get some tougher opponents, but I'd like to see who else they have. But, yeah, I mean, that's good showing for cash right there.
Turns out I do, but let's go down to A1. I've got everybody's schedule right here.
Look at you.
Written down. District A1, Merritt gets their first win of the season, 48-6 over Cordell. Burns Flatdale City, Brian Archer, former assistant on the Elk City staff back in the day, went to Cashin. Now he's the head man over at Burns Flatdale City. They get a win against Carnegie, 44-12, in their season opener. Is there, I mean, we talked about Fairview, 68-15 over Chisholm. That looks to be one of those teams. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Minko beat Moreland 14-6. Thomas having a little bit of trouble early on. Alva blew them out 44-20. And then Hollis down in B1, another Paragon TV school. They whipped up on Wilson 56-6 in their season opener. So a good one there for the Tigers. Looking ahead to this week, as far as those two districts, you got Elk City with Canadian. Cash has Elgin. You mentioned Clinton going to Heritage Hall. Weatherford, after falling to Kingfisher 38-21 on Friday night, they host El Reno. Woodward, took it on the chin to Guthrie, 50-0. They get Bethany, so things don't get any easier for the Boomers right out of the gate. Then in A1.
Well, they get a 4A school this time, so that's what they want, right?
Maybe. We'll find out.
Okay.
That's going to be a tough one, I can tell you that.
Absolutely.
Fairview and Alva. Burns Flatdale City will go to Cordell. Hooker's at Watonga. Sayre is back in action against Walters after having last week off. We got Moreland and Pawnee. Texoma goes to Carnegie, and then doesn't get any easier for Thomas as they host Cash and Merritt's got this week off for finishing out their non-district schedule next week, and then Hollis will host Velma Alma. Across the state, a few games of note. One is what seemingly the biggest game in the state each and every single year. It's Jinx Union. For 4A schools, you've got Noble at Tuttle. That's number five. That's number 10 in 5A Noble against number 5 in 4A Tuttle. Cushing, if you've listened to our show, you know how much we like the Tigers. 4A's number 3, Cushing, will go to Perkins Tryon, which is 3A number 4. And then also, and these rankings are according to the Oklahoman because they picked out the top 10 games of the week. So I look for the AP poll. It's not out yet. Metro Christian, 3A's number 10, will go to Poto, who the Oklahoman has as 4A's number 1. So that's kind of a little bit of a glance of what's going on around the state. I'll be interested to see a few of those games. Cushing, you know, they've been just racking up points as we expected to start the season. That's their first real test, I think, on the road at Perkins.
Watch that Weatherford-El Reno game because Chickasha beat El Reno, if I'm not mistaken, in week 0.
That's correct, 20-14.
And I know you're not supposed to, but you can. I think you can at high school when you start comparing scores. So kind of keep an eye on that when everyone's kind of, and we were included, putting Weatherford kind of as a rebound year. They start 0-2, and then all of a sudden we're talking about teams like, well, Elk City and Clinton and Cash, and now Chickasha as the four teams that could be vying for a spot in 4A1.
Yeah, Chickasha beat El Reno and then took it on the chin against Marlow. We wonder what they've got left off that team from last year.
Yeah.
Obviously some with the way that they won that game. Yeah, I think that's the comparing scores is interesting because, you know, everybody I'm sure is down on what happened to the Red Tornadoes on Friday night. But then you look for district purposes wise, they beat a team, 21-7, that just beat Weatherford 38-21. You know what I mean? So that may not it may be more attributed to young guys that haven't played a ton, playing a really difficult non-district schedule versus Clinton being down.
Sure. Yeah.
Anything else that caught your eye high school football-wise?
No, I covered
the state
it.
Or right here.
Ada beating Ardmore kind of stood
out. I had that written down. Not only beating them, but the way that they beat them. It seemed like Ada dominated that game over Ardmore. I had that right there.
Anytime you see Ada winning a game like that, you go, uh-oh, Cougars back? Except we've been saying, are the Cougars back longer than we've seen is Texas back? So maybe this could be there. I don't know. They're unranked and beat their ranked rival in 5A Ardmore.
Well, they get another chance to prove that they're back this week.
Who they got?
At McAllister.
There it is. All right.
So.
And tell my sister to go watch that. She lives over there.
Yeah. At McAllister coming up on Friday night for the Cougars. Talk about tough starts. At Ardmore, at McAllister. That's pretty
good. Teams like, you know, those teams like Ada, Clinton, Elk City, scheduling tough. I like it.
Yeah, that'll be
I'm always a big fan
I'm
of
actually
that.
Kind of surprised, you know, I guess because Ada's not ranked yet. In anybody's mind, that's why you don't see that on that list that I just went through.
Right.
A few of those games that are the top 10 games of the week, according to the Oklahoman.
Yeah. Well, how did Carl Albert do?
Carl Albert won.
They won.
Yes, they beat Midwest City.
And Coweta, I think, edged by Wagner, didn't they?
Yes. Yeah, Carl Albert beat Midwest City 39-25.
So that's Coweta. a nice
Coweta won. I think it was 9-7. Yeah, 9-7 over Wagner. So they've got to win at home against Carl Albert and at Wagner to start the year. Coweta would be flying up the rankings. I think they did last week.
Now I think they're kind of proving it. Talk about tough schedule. You think when Coweta got their schedule, Carl Albert, Wagner, whoa. Now all of a sudden they're 2-0 thinking –
at
hey,
Pryor next.
Don't know much about Pryor.
Feels like a respite compared to the first. They're Pryor's 0-1. They lost to Pensacola Catholic in Florida.
Oh, darn. Sorry about your luck. You went down to Pensacola and lost.
41-0. That game is in 2 weeks. Coweta Pryor's in two weeks.
See.
The Tigers have the week off. Yeah, it's got off to a good start. I'm anxious to see what happens right here at Big Oak Stadium on Friday because it seems to me, just watching the first few games, and I get it, it's not, maybe not the most powerful teams on the Big Elk schedule so far, but it does look like it's going to be hard to run the football on the brown and white.
Yeah.
And so if they can prove a little bit this week with being able to control the team's passing games, this could be a very, very, very good defense. And
yeah,
then,
I'm very anxious to see Friday night happens. I'm very anxious.
I am too.
Can't wait.
Hey, it's a Paul Jones Drug Tuesday. Paul Jones Drug, Rodney Skinner down there at 809 North Main Street. Care you can trust right here in the Elk City area. They are the oldest compounding pharmacy in Elk City. They've got free local delivery. You can drive through and pick up your stuff, curbside testing and vaccinations, and also something called a blister pack. That's your long-term care unit. Packaging. We'll continue to tell you more about Paul Jones Drug as we go along throughout the show today. Coming up next, the first to me official college football weekend. What do we think from not only right here in this state but around the country? We'll let you know. And then look forward to what's coming up this week. One huge one, or is it? The names are big anyway. Skinny on Sports right here on 98.1 FM, the Sports Animal.
Paul Jones Drug offers a free service that makes taking your daily medications safe and easy. It's called convenience packaging, meaning they can combine all of your daily medications and put them in sealed, separate daily packages. This process replaces you from having to fill your daily medication dispenser. And as always, Paul Jones Drug prepares individual blister packaging for long-term care patients. With their drive-through window, curbside service, and free local delivery, it's just more reasons you should choose Paul Jones Drug, 809 North Main Street in Elk City.
I'm Rodney Skinner with Paul Jones Drug, and I promise we provide care you can trust.
The Skinny on Sports.
Welcome back. Skinny on Sports, 98.1 FM, the Sports Animal, right here on a Paul Jones Drug Tuesday. It's still kind of weird to say Tuesday.
I know, isn't
it? It feels like a Monday.
Isn't that nice, though? Isn't that real nice?
It is real nice,
like,
Clark.
Whoa.
It's just a real nice surprise.
Hey, it's Tuesday.
Just a real nice surprise.
Then you know it's going to suck. It's next Monday. Oh, we got to work for 5 days now?
It's back to a normal week. But for now, it's all good.
I'll take it. I will absolutely take it.
College football this weekend right here in the state of Oklahoma. The Oklahoma Sooners start out the Brent Venables era with a 45-13 win over UTEP. OU raced out the first three possessions. It looked like unstoppable offense, 21-0 early. Then hit a little bit of a lull there toward the end of the first quarter throughout the second period until the very end, made it 28-10 at halftime, and then they cruised home with a 45-13 win. What were your thoughts? It was a topic that was discussed widely at the golf course yesterday.
I bet.
What did you think?
It's kind of like what we thought about Elk City on Friday night. They looked good, but there was still stuff that you could work on that we saw, that I saw anyway. Started off hot, then kind of saw some cracks in the second quarter. But what I liked was there was adjustments made, I think, at halftime, and they came out okay in the second half and beat a team like they should have beat a team. I was happy about it. I didn't like you kind of pointed on it too on Friday about long drives. Saw a couple of those. Couldn't get them off the field on third down or you know, give them opportunities to either kick field goal because they got it within range or go for it. Again, stuff you can work on. But I saw some, you know, maybe, I mean, where to start? Some stars in the making. There's some definite possibilities and some hope for a better defense at times. So, and the offense, I think, can hum when it's all clicking. So, I mean, should have beat a team like that. Should beat the team next week even harder. And we'll see what we got going to Lincoln. But overall, though, I'm glad that there felt like a different intensity there. Like we've seen in the past in openers where you get at that big start, take the foot off the gas, and then we get a two-lane situation. It didn't feel like that was ever going to happen. Even in that second quarter, it didn't feel like that was going to happen. But I did see things that they need to work on. Still, though, the funny thing is, people still don't know what to make of this team as far as are they contenders for a college football playoff spot? Are they Big 12 contenders? Or are they going to take a step back and be like a 7-5 squad under first-year head coach Brent Venables? There's still people, even after that game, not really sure where to place them, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and I think a bunch of that is the opponent.
Yeah.
These first two, it's probably the best time for Oklahoma not to have one of those marquee out-of-conference games that we've become so accustomed to seeing against some of the big boys, just for the simple fact of everything being new and trying to be able to iron everything out. The things that I noticed were, one, and they're on the text line pointing that out, even the plays – I mean, listen, I said no 10 – that was annoying, there's no doubt. There was a couple, three or four, where it was like, oh, my gosh, you can't get UTEP off the field. Having said that, there were very, very, very few times where, no matter what the play was, where there weren't two or three red jerseys around either the ball carrier, the quarterback at times, or the receivers that were catching the ball. You know, Billy Bowman flashed to me of a guy that was like a half step from really doing some amazing day, having an amazing day. You know, he was right where he needed to be, it seemed like, just maybe a half step too late. I mean, he's still there to make tackles, but, I mean, it felt like to me he was close to a couple of picks. Had the one where he jumped up with his right hand and almost corralled that one in.
Yeah.
You know, it seems like they being the coaching staff at Oklahoma, know where his best place is on the field. Whereas last year, to me, that was such a frustrating thing with the – how highly thought of he was as a recruit coming in as a true freshman. It never felt like they really knew where to put him.
Mm-hmm.
I think this coaching staff and Brent Venables especially has figured that out, and he looks like, you know, a type of guy in the back end as a safety that we haven't seen much. I mean, attacking, and looks more physical than a lot of the guys that have been back there. His athleticism is off the charts. So that.
Do you think they want to work him in like as a Roy Williams type player?
I don't know if he's going to be down.
I didn't see him close to the line very much.
Yeah. I mean, maybe he
talk
grows.
About athleticism. You know, you could use him utility wise. You know, all over the place. But it looked like he was more in coverage than anything else.
Maybe
I didn't see him blitz a lot.
Maybe he grows into that cheetah spot. Grows physically. You know, when Deshaun White or, you know, Justin Harrington was a guy I thought we had seen, we really didn't. you know, in there kind of at that spot that a lot of people were kind of talking up over the offseason, him getting back in the good graces of Venables after really kind of struggling to fit in last year. So I thought he was a guy. Reggie Grimes was one that was in the backfield a ton. He came in with another guy that came in with so much promise recruiting-wise that never really felt like they got much out of him. And, you know, he had 2.5 sacks and felt like he was in the backfield harassing a bunch. So, and then somebody's already commented on the text line as well. On a day that was hotter than I think a lot of people thought it was going to be and humid, It did look like the Sooners were well-conditioned all the way into the third and fourth quarter, which, you know, I think at times the last few years has not been the case. And so maybe you can already see the dividends being paid in the summertime with Schmitty. So those are a few things. Gabriel was kind of an uneven performance, maybe. And maybe that's just because it didn't feel like – for me, I'd rather see a lot more run game against a team like that. Have the O-line overpower and then to like use the run to set up the pass, and it almost felt like it was the other way around, using the pass to set up the run. Of course, people want to see what he can do. Mims looked great, which, you know, I heard this guy's talking about it on Saturday leading up to the game. You know how many catches he had last year, Marvin Mims?
Like less than 10, I think.
No, 32.
32 catches?
Less than 3 a game.
Okay, that's all right.
Less than 3 catches per game for Marvin Mims.
Didn't feel like he was targeted enough.
Well, obviously not.
And that was my biggest fear was he's going to go. My fear was even before Riley announced, I thought this guy's going to leave us. He's going to get frustrated and go.
I think he would have if Riley was still here. I think that's still, to me, one of the biggest question marks on this team. Is outside of him, can it be Weiss? Can it be Farouk? I thought Braden Willis showed up, as a lot of people thought he might.
Absolutely.
He looks really, really good. And then the running backs, I thought Eric Gray ran as hard as he has in his Sooner career, and I still don't think he's better than Marcus Major.
Back to the Schmitty thing, though, I did notice about Eric Gray. I thought he looked bigger.
He was, yeah. They mentioned he's 10 or 15 pounds bigger, or
he
whatever.
He looked
tougher.
Upper body looked a lot bigger,
and he was able to move the pile on a couple of those third and shorts or second and shorts to get first downs.
Well, but so was Major.
Major just looks to me like the better player.
It could be.
And Javonte Barnes, I get it. It could have been with the seconds or thirds out there, but Javonte Barnes looked really, really good in his limited playing time.
How fun is Gavin Freeman going to be?
Gavin Freeman, what? I mean, you want to talk about storybook?
I'm telling you.
Absolute storybook. His dad played at Oklahoma. He's a walk-on, first touch, scores a touchdown, and just a heck of a run to boot. That was the storybook stuff. And he even mentioned that after the game was over. Like, you know, this is something you couldn't even dream of for this to really happen that way.
They got to find ways to get him the ball in space, that creative plays like that. The dude's special. That dude's special. That was fun. That was a fun run.
So
I actually applauded UTEP for the poor tackling because it kept him up.
Yeah.
He was going down, and they – anyways.
I don't think you learn anything. I think it's still the truth, and I don't even know. Will you figure something out at Lincoln? Does it take till K-State comes to town, TCU, you know, or even clear to the Cotton Bowl in Texas? I think – there's still a lot to be determined about what Oklahoma's ceiling could be. But all in all, I mean, if you're looking for what looked to be a more fundamentally sound defensive effort, I think you got it than what was going on a couple of years before. Outside of Oklahoma, around the country, that game on Sunday.
Real quick, final thought of OU. We talk about, I don't want to say soft coverage, but, you know, there's guys there. Just UTEP sometimes made better plays throwing downfield. But what I did like was I felt like there was less missed tackles.
I can only think of a couple. Jaden Davis missed on a third down where he was in position, missed, and the receiver got the first down. Then there was one other kind of in the middle of the field. I can't remember who it was. But that's
– it's those little things that we're noticing. That's what we were looking for too, obviously. But it to me, that kind of stood out too. Again, we were kind of focusing in on, are they going to tackle better? Are they going to be better conditioned? Is coverage going to be better? And the coverage thing, I think, can be fixable. And that quarterback at UTEP wasn't a bad quarterback.
Yeah, but come on.
But it's UTEP.
Yeah.
But the tackling, I thought, was because how many times have we seen not only the breakdown in coverage, but then a missed tackle, and they gain another 5-10 yards. So I thought the tackling was better.
And
the defensive front, though. I mean, they're attacking and attacking and attacking and attacking.
It'd be nice to see a little bit more pressure on the quarterback.
Yeah.
I get it. They're getting the ball out of there quick, and when they did hold it, it felt like Oklahoma got there a lot. Well, I think they still had 6 sacks, but it does – that's still a work in progress, I think. Outside of OU, that game on Sunday, oh, my goodness. It went from the most boring, awful football game you can imagine to 10 minutes of just pure craze. Down there in New Orleans between LSU and Florida State. Florida State was up 17-3. Then LSU scored. Then Florida State scored. Then LSU scored. And then it felt like the dagger on the punt return that was muffed inside the 10. Was Florida State taking over. First and goal at LSU's 8-yard line. Just over 2 minutes to play. And then Florida State runs one of the dumbest plays from the 1-yard line I can ever remember. With the situation being, even if you don't score a touchdown, you're still going to be able to run a bunch of time off the clock and kick a field goal that will absolutely end it. And they run a pitch. The guy fumbles it. LSU gets the ball and then marches 99 yards in a minute and 50 or something like that. The review play at the end, which should have ended the game. But the official, and it was hard to see. Like there was, they finally got to the one angle where you could tell, okay, yeah, that knee really did hit inbounds, because from the sideline it's hard to tell if it was actually on the ground, and I'm sure they were the official, knowing the situation, was looking, okay, is he out of bounds, to like when to stop the clock so you get the right time. Misses that, gives LSU a chance. They throw a touchdown pass, and then in the midst of the celebration of, hey, we're going to overtime, Florida State blocks the extra point to win. Just, it was crazy how fast a crappy game turned into something that'll be remembered forever.
Remember what I said about Purdue and Penn State? It kind of felt like that as that game went on. And now that wild finish was a lot of fun. Still, first game for both teams. Is Florida State working their way back as LSU? Are they still kind of mediocre like they have been since they've won the title a couple years ago? I don't know. At the end of the day, we could be seeing both these teams with 5 losses apiece. And like, well, that was a fun game to start. Turns out they're not really that good.
That's what it feels like to me. Having said that, though, to Florida State's side, yes, they won, and they overcame what had to – I mean, being demoralized. And it just kind of shows you something to not quit and go ahead and make a play the way that they did. But look at what LSU gave them. You know, horrible special teams, muffing 2 punts, blocking 2 kicks. You know, everything that had to go right for Florida State. And I get it, that last drive makes it look a lot closer than really what it should have been if they just don't fumble the football on the 1-yard line.
Right.
And so maybe they actually – handled it better, and some of that stuff doesn't even happen if they just go ahead and score and nobody cares that LSU marches down and makes it a one possession game. But that's one to watch, because you know, Clemson last night, even though they covered the couple of 3-touchdown win, North Carolina State should have lost. You see the way that game ended?
No.
Against East Carolina?
I had that on for a little bit, and I turned it.
It was 21-7, North Carolina State.
Right, that's probably when I turned it.
East Carolina comes back, scores 2 touchdowns. They have an extra point to tie it with 3.5 minutes to play. The kicker misses it. East Carolina gets it back. They drive down 40-yard field goal to win the thing, and he missed it.
Oh, dear.
NC State, way lucky to get out of there with a win.
Dodging bullets like Neo on a rooftop. That's crazy.
Yes, they were lucky as all get out. And then you had the biggest games. Notre Dame, Ohio State. Was Ohio State disappointing, or Notre Dame maybe better than what you thought?
You know what I thought was, I texted this to somebody, keep in mind that was a Saturday night game, so my mind probably wasn't right. But I texted somebody and said, man, Ohio State kind of feels like OU of last year. High expectations, or you know, but that wasn't Tulane they were playing. That was Notre Dame. But everyone was quick to jump on the Ohio State bandwagon, thinking that they're going to just romp over Notre Dame. Notre Dame's still Notre Dame. There's a lot of tradition there, and I think they play really hard for that coach. So I give them a lot of credit. They're going to go and beat some teams I don't think people expect them to beat. But keep an eye on Ohio State. Was that a thing where they kind of came in overconfident, or are we putting them too high?
I was just surprised offensively.
Well, I mean, I thought about that. I guess I wasn't brave enough to say it. You know, they lost some wide receivers. And I was really kind of wondering, is that going to take some time to replace that production? You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, they were led by Egbuka, Emeka Egbuka. And here's the deal. They're not lacking talented guys.
Oh, no, it's still Ohio State.
Yeah. Marvin Harrison Jr. The one thing that's crazy, though, the guy that you thought you could absolutely count on for Ohio State coming back was Jackson Smith and Jigba. Last time we saw him, all he was doing was setting a bowl game record with 347 yards receiving against Utah in the Rose Bowl a year ago. He had 2 catches for 3 yards.
Yeah.
You know, and he's the guy that really makes that go. Travion Henderson had 90 yards on the ground, but a pretty uneven performance from Ohio State. We'll see. And you might be right that those young guys, whether it be Egbuka or Harrison or maybe even Xavier Johnson, are they ready? Because if teams are going to be able to take away Smith and Jigba the way that Notre Dame did, then somebody else is going to have to do it. And whether or not they have somebody else to do it, we'll see. Or maybe, on the other hand, he was helped so much by the presence of Garrett Wilson, by the presence of Chris Olave, that he was able to get open against the team's nickel corner or their third corner or on a safety and what have you. And now that the focus of the other defense is on him, maybe not. He doesn't seem like it, but we'll see. I think it was an interesting game. I think Notre Dame probably comes away with a little bit more credit than what we thought going in. Ohio State's defense, is it actually better? Jim Knowles already making a difference? I mean, I think a lot of that's remained to be seen. And there's probably no worries in Ohio State's offense because it's just going to be phenomenal as it goes. But at least in game one, it was a little bit of a struggle. Here's the main question after the whole thing. All weekend long, here's a question. Are we all just wasting our time?
Is this a two-horse race?
Exactly my question. Are we wasting our time?
That's what I thought after
and just
Clemson
fast
last night.
Forward to yeah. A rematch of last year's national championship game between Georgia and Alabama.
That's what I thought. I was reserving that comment for after last night's Clemson game. Now, I know Clemson, they pulled away late. But, their defense still looks really good. Their offense looks questionable. I don't know if DJ even lasts the rest of the season. Speaking of an OU situation, when their student section is going to start chanting
Cade Klubnik?
Yeah.
We want Cade?
Yeah. No, yeah, it feels like a match race here between Georgia and Alabama at this point. I'm not seeing anybody else. I mean, we'll have two others, obviously, but does it matter?
That's what I'm saying. I mean,
Georgia looked like men among boys
dude,
against
ridiculous.
Oregon.
If Oregon really is the 11th best team in the country, the Georgia's way better than anybody.
Georgia can beat Jacksonville Jaguars at this rate. They literally looked like men.
Yeah,
against little boys out there.
That was
and
pretty.
Speaking of
crazy.
Oregon and the Pac-12, are they done?
Yeah, there you go. Well, we got to mention it. Out west, Alex Grinch defense, 6 interceptions, 3 returned for touchdowns. USC rolled over Rice 66-14 in front of
– they cooked Rice?
58. I see what you did there.
Thank you.
In front of 58,000 people.
Ooh. We'll see. But Utah had their chance.
Man, Utah should have won that game.
Should have won that game. Of course, we mentioned Oregon. And I want to see more out of you. I mean, I know it's Rice. But, I mean, that is saying something. Alex Grinch defense doing that couldn't even do that against Tulane. So But we'll see. I want to see, you know, at Stanford, I don't think they should have a problem with it. They shouldn't. But I want to see them go up against Utah, Notre Dame. We mentioned them. There's always that game. But it's just going to take one loss now. One loss from USC and the Pac-12's cooked. They're done.
Yeah, I'm afraid that's right.
And I don't think USC is going to go undefeated. Are they going to be better? Sure. They have to be. They got all those great talent, that great talent over there.
Mm-hmm.
But are they going to go undefeated? Hard to see it.
No, I don't think so. Looking forward to this week. All the headlines are going to be Alabama, Texas, and for good reason. But I think there's going to be there's some other games that are going to be way better than that one. Tennessee versus Pitt looks like a fun game. You've got Iowa State and Iowa.
Always fun.
Always a fun one. Baylor.
The way Iowa played, holy moly.
Man. 7-3, and it's not because they scored a touchdown. They had a field goal and two safeties to get to 7. Dear Lord. I did see that since Matt Campbell has been at Iowa State, in this game, Iowa leads the turnover battle 9-0. Iowa State's defense under Matt Campbell has never caused an Iowa turnover. That's a big part of why Iowa has been winning this game. So you've got that one. I think K-State and Missouri is one that looks to be pretty good. Houston got out just by the hair of their chinny-chin-chin in a couple overtimes. They go to Tech and the Red Raiders. And then also, all of a sudden, that trip to the swamp for my Kentucky Wildcats looks a whole heck of a lot harder than it did a week ago. Anthony Richardson, what do you think about that guy?
That was a heck of a play.
There's a bunch of heck of a plays by that dude. How in the hell does Dan Mullen not find a way to get him on the field last year?
I know.
Might have saved his job. What's he doing?
Right.
Holy moly. Yeah, Florida. Is that the best win that anybody had?
Florida over Utah?
Florida over Utah.
Hard to find a better one.
I mean, I guess Ohio State beating Notre Dame would be up there because of the rankings, and both were on their home field.
On the home field, yeah. Hard to find a better one than that one.
That was a good win. There's a question. Did you see that UCLA crowd?
What a joke.
And our man Doug Gottlieb was yesterday trying to defend it. Like, we've got all this to do in California. You really expect people to go out and watch a college football game when it's 100? Yeah.
Yeah.
It's exactly what we expect.
Yeah.
Precisely what we would expect is to do that. Because guess what? It happens where people care. People don't care where people care for college football, mainly the South. It doesn't matter what the weather is.
Or the record.
Nothing. You'll be there.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was embarrassing. Just over like 23,000 or something like that. Less than 30.
Who'd they open with? Who they even play?
UCLA. Just a second, I'll tell you.
I mean, I keep going back.
It was Bowling Green.
Bowling Green. Okay, yeah. And obviously Bowling Green's not bringing fans.
And that's another thing about it.
But that shouldn't be – should that matter? I mean, if it's Bowling Green at Alabama, the place is going to be packed on a Saturday afternoon in 100-degree weather.
Yeah, now, it might not be that way the whole game, but at the start of it, there's going to be a lot of people there.
Especially the first game of the year. People are always starving for college football at that time of the year.
Yeah, here's what's sad. USC hasn't had that many people at a game since they played for the national championship. Yeah, and what's bad is the stadium was about 60% full.
Yeah.
I wonder if Caleb or Mario Williams or Latrell McCutcheon kind of looked up and went, "The hell is this? Where are all the people?"
Someone had to have told them this is what's going to be like when you go there.
It's still, you'd think it would be a little bit kind of shocking. We're used to running out in front of full, no matter where you were playing, the stands were full.
And get ready, boys, because as soon as you lose that first game, they will stop coming. That's that market over there. That's just the fact of it. They'll just stop coming. So the crowds will get even smaller. And even if, now, talking about what? The most crowd they've had since their last national title at what? What would you say, about 59?
Yeah, it was like 59,000.
59,000. I think even that number will dwindle after the first game is over. That'll dwindle. I keep going back to when OU went to UCLA. I was at that game, and there were more OU fans there. And obviously it's because Oklahoma travels well. I think this is the Rose Bowl. This is everyone, you know, this is a – I love the idea of the history of college football in this venue. It's kind of sad that a school that plays there, plays their home games there, they don't embrace that. I don't know. It drives me crazy a little bit. But welcome to the Big Ten, L.A.
ESPN's power rankings after week one.
Change. See, this is where it goes to, they don't know where to put OU.
Change at the top. Georgia number one, Alabama two, Ohio State three. There are the Sooners at number four. Michigan five, Notre Dame six, A&M seven, Baylor eight, USC nine, Arkansas. Arkansas, a heck of a win against Cincinnati.
Yep.
Very good win. That might be the best one. Florida over Utah is a good one. Florida 11, Clemson 12, Miami 13, Wisconsin 14, Michigan State 15. The Utes fall down to 16. Then you have Oklahoma State, Pitt, Kentucky, North Carolina State rounding out the top 20. So that's just kind of a sneak peek at some other rankings from around the country. We have plenty of time for the rest of the week to talk about the game coming up. But
what do you think? It's Tuesday. It's already Tuesday.
Yeah,
A&M did struggle.
They struggled.
Their offensive line does not look good.
Be interesting, though, you know, how much is it hype and how much will there actually be a game down in Austin coming up on Saturday morning? It's college football. A good week. A good week one. Maybe not an epic week one because some of the bigger games were a little bit – I mean, Georgia, Oregon obviously was a complete dud. And Notre Dame, Ohio State just wasn't that much fun to watch. That makes sense. It'll get better as we move along. Skinny on Sports right here on the Sports Animal.
Paul Jones Drug is Elk City's most experienced compounding pharmacy, meaning they can custom make your prescription medications to your doctor's specifications, safely and effectively providing you with exactly what you need. And for your convenience, Paul Jones Drug has a drive-through pickup window as well as curbside service for testing and vaccinations and offers free local delivery. Just a couple reasons you should choose Paul Jones Drug, 809 North Main Street in Elk City.
I'm Rodney Skinner with Paul Jones Drug, and I promise we provide care you can trust.
The Skinny on Sports.
Welcome back. Skinny on Sports, 98.1 FM, the Sports Animal, right here on a Paul Jones Drug Tuesday. Paul Jones Drug down there at 809 North Main Street. Convenience packaging, Jared. It's one of the coolest things that I've heard of in a while. Instead of having to refill your plastic pill container each week and making sure you have the right amount of pills in the right slot and all that, Paul Jones Drug will do that for you. They'll individually package your daily meds. It's convenience packaging. They also have tons of DME, which is durable medical equipment, walkers, cranes, crutches, wraps and braces, and etc. They accept most insurances, but here's the thing. It's not just a drugstore. It's also got a bunch of awesome gifts, greeting cards. Go on down there. 809 North Main Street in Elk City. Paul Jones Drug and Rodney Skinner in the game. Care you can trust. Give him a call, 580-225-2121. We appreciate Rodney and his crew being a part of our show each and every Tuesday. Give me a couple of things you're looking ahead or looking forward to this NFL season with the opening kickoff coming up on Thursday.
I'm looking forward to, you know, Cincinnati and Joe Burrow. Injured his first year, comes back, does what he does, gets him to the Super Bowl. But I'm still kind of questioning if they're even the favorites in their division. I want to see Cincinnati. Are they going to be a perennial power with that great quarterback and great offense? Or was last year kind of an anomaly? Because a lot of people Didn't really expect much out of Joe Burrow after an injury, but turns out he's a really good quarterback. That's one thing. Can Buffalo finally get over the hump and get to the Super Bowl? I think I have them picked as a Super Bowl favorite, not a favorite to get there. And can LA repeat? Why shouldn't they? Why couldn't they be? Because it looks like they kept a lot of the guys that were a big part of that run last year. So a couple of things. Of course, Dallas. You know, we're always interested in Dallas and what they can do. Are they favorites in the East, or do recent injuries change that? So some things I'll be looking for. Maybe what Tom Brady does down south, down in Tampa Bay. Does he care? Didn't care much about the preseason.
I'm interested in Florida also, but for a totally different reason.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see Tua. With the weapons that he has around him, it is kind of a make-or-break time for Tua as a starting quarterback in the NFL. And I can see it going both ways. I can see him lighting it up, and I can see him being a little bit too much noodle-armed and you know, can't quite get it to where it needs to go. That's fascinating to me, because if he can be what a lot of people thought, including myself, it seems ridiculous now, but I liked him better than – I mean, I did not like Justin Herbert coming out of Oregon. And I love Tua, and that looks like a totally wrong assessment there. But we'll see. This is kind of – they've surrounded him with not only Waddle and Hill. They've also got Gesicki, the tight end. They brought in – Cedric Wilson, speaking of the Cowboys, he was always seemed to be a guy that might make you a pretty good, pretty big play on third down when you really needed it. So this is Tua's year. If he's going to be able to figure out, is he or isn't he a long-term solution at quarterback for Miami? So he's one of them. You know, the Josh Allen versus Pat Mahomes, I hope we get to see that again just because of how much fun that was in the playoffs there, right, in Arrowhead. I think it would be interesting to see if that game was in Buffalo instead of Kansas City. You know, so that's another thing. The AFC West, who comes out of the pack? When you think of it, I think I could see each team winning that division in their own way, with Denver, the Raiders, the Chargers, and Kansas City. That's going to be a great race. And then, like you said, Dallas. There's always going to be some intrigue around Baker Mayfield just because of the polarization of him and how he elicits emotions from people, both positive and negatively. You know, that's going to be fun to watch. So, you know, and then, like you said, the Rams. Why can't they?
Figure out a way to repeat. I just expected after they won last year that we'd see a bunch of guys get better deals. Because it looked like they were, you know, getting plug and play guys, and then, you know, I mean, we saw Von Miller go, but not a lot of everybody else. They still got a lot of those key pieces back.
It really reminded me of what happened in Tampa last year. This time, where are you going to lose a bunch of guys? Nope, we're going to bring them all back.
Yeah,
and then try it one more time, and that didn't go as well as obviously the Bucs were hoping for, and the Rams were a huge part of that, obviously in the playoffs. I think the Brady thing is interesting because, my goodness, what a horrible preseason for Brady and that and the O-line at Tampa with the injuries, the defections in the first place, and then injuries, and especially injuries to the guys in the middle of the line. And we've seen for years the one way that you can slow Tom Brady down, and this is the truth with a lot of quarterbacks, it's not just him, but we've seen it be very effective, is to get in his face right up the middle, be able to push back into the pocket with guys right up the middle. And so when you look at the problems on that offensive line at the guards and the center, could that be a little, you know, it's hard to say kryptonite for a 45-year-old guy that's the greatest quarterback of all time, but that's the one thing we've seen, is that push up the middle has really flustered him, and he doesn't like people being kind of around his feet and in his face, and that could cause some pretty big problems. We have not made our – Dakota's asking about Super Bowl picks. We have not done that. You want to do that tomorrow or you want to do it Thursday?
First game's Thursday, right?
First game's Thursday.
Why not just do it Thursday? Okay, I got it all ready to go.
All right, we can do that Thursday. We'll pick division winners, wild cards. what, MVP? I don't really care about the defensive player of the year. I mean, we can name one. But
MVP? I'll have to think about that one. I didn't pick that one.
Just division winners and then playoffs. Who's going to make it? Who we think will make it to the Super Bowl this year? Yeah, let's do that. Let's do that Thursday.
All right.
With the opener coming up Thursday as well. So that's something to look forward to.
Yeah.
NFL coming back. One last baseball nugget.
What you got?
Aaron Judge hit his 54th home run of the season yesterday. He's got 54 through 135 games. Do you know how many players have ever had more than 54 home runs through 135 games in Major League Baseball history?
Well, I'm going to guess a handful or less.
There's two.
Two.
Any guesses on who they are?
No. We got 1 minute left.
Sammy Sosa and Barry Bonds had 57 through 135 games. Aaron Judge is 54. He's right on the same pace as Mark McGwire and some guy named Babe Ruth.
Oh, that guy.
He tied A-Rod.
Special talent, man.
He tied A-Rod last night at 54 home runs. That's the most by a right-handed hitter in Yankees history. Trying to chase down, obviously, Ruth, but more importantly, Maris. For Yankees lore, for American League lore. Because all those ridiculous seasons always happened in the National League back in the 90s and early 2000s. So Roger Maris still holds the record. The official record in the American League, the unofficial record in my mind for most home runs in a season. It's a heck of a story that's still not getting enough traction in my mind. But it feels like it will if he can continue. I think once you get, if you get in that 58, 59... You know, 60, it was always, you know, that number that we didn't see for a long, long, long time. I think that's when you start really getting the country captivated and paying attention.
How about Albert Pujols against the Cubs?
Pujols.
Did you see that?
695. Is that where he's at?
Yeah, I think so. Did you see that? His last at-bat versus the Cubs?
No, I missed this. Did he go deep?
Yeah. In the eighth, that was
maybe I did see
was ultimately the decider. I believe that was this weekend. So he's continuing to do things at that age that is crazy.
I did see that. Yeah, 695. I saw that.
Yeah.
I didn't realize. I don't guess I realized that was going to be his last at bat against the Cubs.
Well, that's what they say. You know, who knows?
He's one shy of tying Alex Rodriguez for fourth all time. Trying to be only the fourth guy ever to get to 700 home runs. And he's doing it at the age of 57. Can you believe it?
57.
Exactly right on the text line. This is the problem with baseball. They don't promote it very well.
No, that's 100% right. Saying that forever.
100% right. Yeah, I did see that on Sunday. Where Pujols goes deep again. Man. So these are great stories. Between this and Ohtani, he did, what did he do this? His 10th win, I think. 10th win and 30 home runs. Nobody had ever done that. After hitting 30 home runs and striking out, I think it was 100 or 200, whatever that was. Still doing things nobody has ever, ever, ever done in the game.
I wonder how long that can continue, him pitching.
Oh, I know.
You know, feel like something's got to give.
At some point, you'd think so.
But maybe not. Maybe this guy is just a special athlete that he can do it both for a long time. Still very early in his career, though. But I wonder at what time are we going to get an alert says, Ohtani says he's not pitching anymore.
Yeah, just be a hitter.
Just to be a hitter.
Yeah. Ah, that's right. And he struck out Roger Clemens' son. All right, everybody have a great Tuesday. We'll be back tomorrow. It's been the Skinny on Sports on a Paul Jones Drug Tuesday right here on the Sports Animal.
You've been listening to the Skinny on Sports podcast with Aaron Cowan. Be sure to hit that subscribe button to get alerts of when the latest podcast is available. Thanks for listening.
That ball is blistered to right. Way.